Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hello and welcome to Netflix, your weekly guide on what to binge this week.
Barney Kinkle, the only person you're gonna scare is yourself!
Johnny!
What are you doing?
Keep the noise down.
What are you doing here?
Maze, just in time.
There's a whole load of police here. Think the word, you're gonna hurt yourself. Or someone else.
How many children are you friends with?
I'm Helen Daly.
And I'm Helen Kelly.
Long time no speak. Helen, welcome back.
I know, it's been quite a while. Thanks for having me back.
Today we're going to be chatting about When They See Us, Netflix's new remarkable drama about the Central Park Five.
It's taken the world by storm and caused so many debates and controversy around the American prison system. So today we're going to delve into the issues raised in the documentary / miniseries and just tell you why you need to watch the show like instantly if you haven't already.
And we're going to be joined by Neela Debnath, who will also tell us about the hottest new shows landing on Netflix in July.
So much this week.
I know, let's get to it. Okay, When They See Us, what's it about?
When They See Us is very simply about five Black and Hispanic boys who were wrongfully accused of the rape and attack of Trisha Miley, and they went and spent time in prison. They were wrongfully accused and they were later acquitted when Matias Reyes confessed to the attack, and it kind of like looks on from the moment that they were kind of taken into police custody all the way up until when they got out of prison and their time in prison. And also there's When They See Us Now, the documentary, which sees them speak to Oprah Winfrey about kind of like what they went through. So it's kind of like, this is what they said has happened, and then this is them reflecting on what happened and that, speaking to the actors who kind of like portrayed them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it is like a kind of remarkable documentary in the sense, drama, in the sense that it's, you know, four parts that are very different, like no two episodes are the same. Yeah. I think you'd agree with that. So we thought for this discussion that we'd go through each different part and chat about, you know, our kind of, not best bits, because that would be like a little bit insensitive, but, you know, the talking points from it.
Yeah.
And, you know, what we thought when we were watching it. And I know, Helen, you really wanted to talk, first of all, about the title.
Yeah, so I just think the title is, like, so interesting. Like, I didn't even think about it when I first started watching it. So When They See Us, you kind of, unless you know about the five men called the Central Park Five, you kind of wouldn't really know what this is going to be about when you first start, when you like look at it on Netflix, like when you just see the title. But what I thought was really interesting was Ava DuVernay, who kind of directed this, said that it was going to be called Central Park Five. However, she insisted that it got changed because after spending time with those five men, she realized that, she said in like When They See Us Now, it felt like something that had been put upon the men by the press, the prosecutors and by the police. And it kind of took away their face and like kind of their stories and like dehumanized them. So she just kind of wanted to bring everyone who is watching this's attention to these are the five men. Like, this is Kevin Richardson, this is Antoine McRae, this is Yousef Salem, this is Raymond Santana, this is Corey Wise. Like, these are the five men. This is their names. This is who you need to know. Don't just group them all together.
Yeah, and I think as well, you know, I personally had never heard of the case. I didn't have a clue. You know, it happened in 1989,
yeah.
You know, way before we were born. And I think it was a really clever move by Ava DuVernay to kind of, you know, make it more of a drama, I guess, you know, because I don't know whether I'd watch it if it was a documentary. I maybe would come across it. But, you know, when I heard that it was a drama, that it had this fantastic cast in it, it immediately made me want to watch it and probably has illuminated the case to a lot more people than it maybe would have if it was a documentary.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of the case either, but I have watched Ava's kind of documentary film, 13th, I think it is, on Netflix. And that's also about the American prison system and like how it's like, I don't, it's really hard to like get into, but it's kind of along this kind of vein, like people who are sometimes spending longer in prison than maybe they should, or like how people get sent back into prison, etc. So it's just kind of like looking at that, and I just think this is like really in that vein, and Ava kind of knows like what to look for and what to focus on. And I just thought, yeah, if she's in charge of this, I just feel like it's going to be handled really well.
Yeah, she's come out actually recently and said that it was very much a case of art being activism. And I guess, you know, it has certainly got people talking. Probably the bit that people are talking about the most is in part one, where you see, you know, the kids in within the police station. Yeah. And, you know, they're having a little bit of a tough time. Obviously, this is just a dramatic representation of what they say happened. And that's what the prosecution is saying. But yeah, I mean, you really see like the actors, the young kid actors blossom in this scene, I think.
I think like in the first episode, one of the ones that really like broke my heart was young Kevin Richardson. Like when he's in the police station, and in the first episode, you see him just kind of like wandering down to Central Park. Like he's like, oh, there's loads of these like boys heading down there. Like, I wonder what's going on.
Yeah, it's just a normal day. There's nothing special about it.
He's just interested. He wants to know what's going on. He's really curious. And so he like goes down, and then suddenly the police are there, and he's like being hit in the face. And you just see him in the police station with this black eye, and you're like, my heart is breaking. Yeah. Like you just think of like, that could be your little brother, or like that could be your nephew or your cousin, or like someone you know. And it's just like, just let him have his mum there, like come on. And
yeah,
obviously there's different kind of accounts of what happened, but in the drama you're kind of, there's this kind of hint that they've been kept away from their family, they've been questioned for hours, they haven't had anything to eat or drink, they haven't been able to have a bathroom break. I think that's what Raymond Santana's father says at like one point. He's like, he hasn't had a bathroom break. And you're just kind of like, I felt like a parent, like, oh my God, is this my child? Like, yeah. My heart was breaking watching it. That the kids were just amazing.
I think that's it as well. Asante Black, who plays the young Kevin Richardson, he has such a baby face, and it just makes it so heartbreaking to watch, because he's just a boy. Like, he is literally just a boy in the park at the wrong day. Simple as. And this horrendous thing happens, and this is where we also meet Felicity Huffman's character, Linda Fairstein, who is she like the prosecutor?
I think she's kind of like the lead of the police case. I think she looks at like sexual attacks in New York. She heads up that kind of department. And because this woman's been raped, she's like, yeah, this is our case.
And there's obviously been like, you know, an epidemic, and, you know, they're keen to crack down on it. And for some reason, it's this case that they crack down on it. And yeah, part one is basically just setting everything up, seeing the boys basically about to head to court. And then we get to part two, where they do.
Honestly, like, this messed with my head, because so you get to episode two and you're in court, and can we just also say how beautiful Joshua Jackson looks in this?
Yes, fine.
Love him. Love him.
A moment of praise.
But also, he was so good in this. Like, he's kind of representing Antoine McRae. They've each got their defense, but there's like the way he's kind of like presenting their case, like, but you, this DNA didn't match. It wasn't conclusive, but you have this. And then he finds out about a sock as well that has like DNA, and then like, well, who does it belong to? And they're like, and you're like, oh my God, they're gonna get free, they're gonna get off, like, this isn't, like, they're not going to prison.
There's so many roller coasters throughout that episode. It's like, oh, they're gonna get off, oh no, they're definitely going down, oh, they might get off here,
but
no.
you know they're going to prison, because obviously it's based on real life. But I just was not prepared for when they said, yeah, guilty. Like, I was just so sure that they were gonna say innocent, or like not guilty. Is that what they say?
Yeah.
Are they saying prison, like, in court?
Not guilty. Yeah.
I was just so certain that that's what they were gonna say. And then when they did, I was like, I felt like I was in that stand.
Well, that's it. They filmed it in such a creative way that literally it was just a kind of blurry noise around the kids' faces, and you just see like each kid reacting to it, and you're just like, oh man, like, that for me was when I had to stop and take a break, because I was like, this was quite heavy at this point.
Yeah, it does get like really intense, and it kind of does show the kids kind of growing up a little bit, and they're
they
kind
grow
of,
up in that second, yeah, literally the second they know that they're going,
they're not
to prison,
kids anymore.
No,
but I think also this episode is the one that kind of brings Jerelle Jerome to the front.
Yeah,
and when he is in like kind of giving his defense as Corey Wise, oh my gosh, if he does not get all of the awards when award season comes around,
yeah,
like, who are they giving it to? Because he was amazing. I just was like, when he's like, I can't read, like, I don't know what it says, I can't read, and he's like getting really like upset, and you're just like, why aren't they
it's
helping
really
him? Yeah, it's, you know, it's distressing for him and it makes it distressing for you. And I just like, I have like never, I feel like I went through with every single emotion mm-hmm. in this episode. In fact, the whole series. And I just think, like, he's just incredible. Like, my heart was breaking. Like, I was crying. And, like, when he finds out he's guilty and he's going to, like, an adult prison, I was like, no, this can't be happening. This isn't true. And I just kind of wanted to, like, jump in and be like, what are you doing? It's wrong. This didn't happen. Like, this isn't right.
Yeah.
They didn't do it. Because obviously you saw him, like, just, like, in a little like fast food place with his girlfriend, then suddenly he just
wanted some food.
Yeah, he goes with his friend, he goes with Youssef to the park, and the next day he goes with Youssef to the police station, and then suddenly he's guilty of rape, and you're like, what?
Yeah, it goes from like not to 100 in like a scene. But another point to bring up, since we're talking about Jerelle Jerome, is he's the only actor who plays the kid and the adult, which I thought was a really interesting choice. Because am I right in saying that Corey was in prison for the longest time?
Yeah, Corey was in prison. I think he was in for
12 years. The others went to like juvenile detention centre. The reason he went to adult prison was because he was 16 at the time.
So I found that really interesting because, you know, you see all the boys grow up in part three, but obviously Corey does have an episode of his own. Why do you think that they chose to stick with Jerelle Jerome throughout? Is it because he was 16?
I mean, I think maybe because then you can kind of, I think because he's kind of in that mind frame of being Corey, and like he spent a lot of time with Corey Wise, like the real Corey Wise. They went around New York. He said that Corey put like his chain around his neck. I was like, you're Corey Wise now. No. He took him to buy like trainers, and like they really bonded. And I think when you watch episode 4, which does focus on Corey, the amount of like work you would have to put into like getting into that headspace of what Corey went through in his time in prison, and I just think maybe it was also easier for just one actor to kind of get into that headspace rather than having two or three. Do you know what
yeah,
I mean?
I think as well, you know, you have Asante that we've discussed before with his little baby face. Like, he could never have carried it through because he just looks so young. Whereas Jerelle has a very interesting face that can be made older. Like, at some points, I did
read an article about it because everyone is asking, why is he the only one? And he was also saying that when he went for his audition originally, he had a full-on beard because he was doing a different series at the time. And so obviously he couldn't shave it off. So he auditioned and then went away for a little bit and then came back and auditioned again once the show had finished without his beard and stuff. And then Ava DuVernay saw that and she just couldn't get it out of her head, and she wanted him to play both of those roles as well.
If we move on to part three, you know, you see Kevin, Antron, Youssef and Raymond grown up, fully different actors, and they're now out of prison and they're adapting to life. And obviously, you know, there is a little bit of a debate kind of at the minute about rehabilitation after prison. It is quite difficult. These guys get absolutely no help at all. They're just thrown back into the real world.
It was horrible watching how they'd been institutionalized, how they'd been labeled, and trying to start a fresh life. And the worst thing, them kind of in the show going, we're innocent, we didn't do it, and yet they've kind of been criminalized. And it is just heartbreaking because it's almost like a kind of double kind of punishment on them.
Because they're told if they want to clear their names, they have to confess to their crimes, which seems like such a paradoxical way of doing things. I don't know. Like, I didn't even know that was a thing until this documentary.
But there are just so many rules. Like, they had to be indoors by certain times. They had to be, like home by a certain time. They couldn't have certain jobs. They couldn't be on like shift patterns with certain mm-hmm. people, and they couldn't like move out of the city. They had to like stay here. And it's like, I can't remember who it was in the drama, and they're like, well, what if I have to be at work? And they're like, well, you can't have that job. And it's like, these men are trying to get their lives back on track, and they're being told, no, you have to be home by 7 p.m. or something, or like 8 p.m. Yeah. So they can't work like a late shift. They have to find a job that is essentially 9 to 5, and 9 to 5 jobs aren't all that common. So
you have like a proper emotional response this episode, because, you know, you have the very sweet moments where like Raymond's getting a girlfriend and stuff, and it's all very sweet and lovely. But then you also have like Antron and his father's relationship, and it's just, it's heavy, isn't it?
I mean, it's both the professional and the personal side of it, because I think one of them can't even admit to his now pregnant wife his past basically. That, and Raymond as well. I felt awful for him. It looked like he went through a lot with his father and his father's new girlfriend and stuff.
I did not like the portrayal of his father's girlfriend, new wife, whoever she was. Like, I mean, I get it, because like Raymond's expecting to come back and be with his father, and like his father like loves him, and he's like, yeah, he didn't do it.
His father's so sweet throughout the full thing.
But like when he's waiting for those phone calls and stuff, yeah. But then his like new partner is just like not there for it at all. She's like, Raymond's sleeping on the sofa, but in the day the kids are running all over the sofa, and like she's like, get out of my house, like what are you doing? I'm gonna call your parole officer and say you're like dealing yeah. drugs. And I'm like, no, don't do that. And the next thing you know, he's back in prison. And I was just like, give this man a break. Like,
I actually found one of the hardest bits to watch was with Yusuf, who's now out of prison. They throw a party for him, and everyone's so happy and everything. And he's just sitting in the corner, like, can't quite take it all in. And it must be, like, such a weird experience. Like, yeah, all your family's there. Everyone's, like, happy. There's music. There's toys. There's everything that you've not seen in prison for so long. And he's just sitting there, like, what is this it? Like, is this what I've missed? Like, he just doesn't kind of understand it. And I thought, that is just heartbreaking. Like, the fact that he can't even enjoy a family party because of what he's been through.
That's the thing, isn't it? The whole kind of institutionalized. You can't... It's almost like you can't function on the outside anymore, and you have to kind of make these deals, and kind of that's why people kind of end up falling back into crime, because I don't think enough is done to kind of help them break away from it. That's the problem.
I'd like to touch on Antron really quickly.
I knew you would.
Just because this moment was so like heartbreaking. I mean, every single bit of this is heartbreaking.
It's all heartbreaking.
But it was so difficult to watch, because he comes home and he's chatting to his mum, and then his dad moves back in, and his dad is like clearly like quite ill. And like he's trying to like repair his relationship. So in the first episode, just a quick recap, when Antron is in police custody, Bobby is like, my son's innocent, he didn't do it. And you see the police kind of say, you want to take your son home, get him to like talk to us. And you see Bobby go in there, and he like throws a chair across the room. He's really angry with Antron, and he's like, you've got to tell them what they want to hear. You've got to give them something if you want to go home. And then Antron kind of like puts himself on the scene of the crime, because he like links the other boys to being there, and he kind of like ends up kind of putting himself there, and he doesn't get to go home. Because it's kind of like, well, he's confessed. Why would we let him go? So he ends up kind of going to prison because of what his dad has told him to do. Like, this is how you get to go home, and it doesn't work. And you see his dad like take the stand in episode 2 and try to be like, explain what he did. But he just makes the situation worse. And so when Antron does come home from prison, Bobby is like really trying to like repair that fractured and strained relationship with Antron. He hasn't been in contact with his son. He's like, his wife's let him back in and they're looking after him, but Antron just doesn't want to know. And there's like this part where he's like struggling, and Antron helps him back into bed or out of bed. I can't remember which.
Yeah, he's about to fall because he's incredibly frail when we meet him again.
You just were like, I was like, oh, is that like their moment where they're like, we still love each other kind of thing, like, I'll always be your son, you'll always be my dad. But then I watch When They See Us Now, and if you, when the real Antoine McRae is talking, he is, it is so hard watching him talk about it because he is struggling to talk about it. And everyone, like the cast who are sitting in the audience, are in tears. Like, I don't think there was one of them who had like a dry eye. And you could see them like all comforting each other, because Oprah's like, how did your relationship with your father end? Like, how did it go? And he's just like, he's a coward. And he's like, I have 6 kids, 4 boys, 2 girls. I couldn't imagine doing that to my son. And you're just like, Antoine's father is like dead and they didn't repair that relationship. And just, that really broke me. And I had to like press pause and be like, I just need to cry again. But I just, people's families were pulled apart and it's just like making me emotional again.
You know, I mean, obviously it is kind of, you know, very much one-sided. We can't escape that fact. It is one-sided. But, you know, even just the dramatic representation of it all, it's such a clever and thought-provoking drama, aside from anything, forgetting that, you know, potentially it's based on a real life case. Just the drama of it is very, very clever. I think Ava DuVernay's done a wonderful job creating 5, you know, quite emotional storylines. They could have come out of prison and just forgot about them, but they all had that one thing that, you know, they couldn't quite fix and stuff. And I thought, yeah, and I mean, we'll move on to part 4 now. And, you know, this is where I thought she did her best work.
I think we might have to get the tissues out for this part.
So part 4 is all about Corey, and he ends up spending, I think it's 14 years in prison.
I think he was meant to do 14, but he serves 12.
Yeah, so he gets the longest time because he's the oldest, and he has a pretty hard time in prison. He gets moved about quite a lot, away from his family, away from Harlem, and it takes a long time for him to get out.
Yeah, and he goes on this very kind of emotional journey that does get kind of, the bit that really struck me was the surreal moment where he's almost like hallucinating that he's with his girlfriend and they've gone to, I think, Coney Island. And it's just beautiful, and it kind of sums up his kind of emotion. I can see everyone's getting very emotional. But it
Helen,
is...
have a timeout.
Be on my right eye, Warren.
Yeah, but that was an incredible way of storytelling and kind of getting across almost his life that he'd lost while on the inside, really.
And I thought in terms of the drama, it was a very clever way, you know, of showcasing how alone he was. He says himself that he was separate to the group, but that, you know, that wasn't only just geographically, you know, he was in a different prison completely, but, you know, he was in solitary. He was miles away from everyone. No one's really spoke to him in the prison. Like, he was alone, and the filming really, really depicted that very well, I thought. You know, you have moments of just silence and it's just him contemplating, you know, maybe have some music. And I thought, I thought DuVernay actually nailed it here. This was when, for me, this was when the tears were rolling, because I was like, this is genuinely very powerful filmmaking aside from the story.
I think just like, the episode just throws you straight in there, doesn't it? It's kind of just like he's gone straight from court to prison, and he's like, the prison guard is like, right, everyone strip. And he's like, looking around like,
is that me as well?
What? Yeah. Like, and you kind of feel like the way that they've done the episode by throwing you straight into like exactly what happened, it kind of feels like, obviously you're not going to feel what Corey felt, but you kind of like, oh, right, we're in there.
Mm-hmm.
We're,
it's as alien to you as it is to him.
Yeah.
And each different situation, you know, he definitely struggles to kind of come to terms with each new place that he's in. And it's exactly the same for you. You don't really know where you are for most of it. You don't know, like, whereabouts in the prison you are. There's just no sense of direction.
Or time either. Because yes, exactly. There's no clocks. You don't know how to kind of tell what time it is, if it's day or night, especially when he's in solitary, you can barely tell.
Yeah, it's only really at the end that you realize like this guy's spent over a decade in prison.
Yeah,
because it, you know, he does change his appearance a little bit, but
yeah, his hair changes, and I feel like you can kind of tell when it's summer just because of the aircon breaking.
Oh yes, yeah.
But when that aircon comes on and you are like,
yeah, it was yes. such a nice moment, and you can hear all the prisoners in the background, like, yeah, thank God.
It was weird. While I was watching it, I almost kind of had a feeling of almost like the Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, very similar.
Because you kind of have that kind of time and that prison journey as well.
It's a long episode as well. It is the longest.
Yeah, like it's like nearly an hour and 40 or something.
It's like a short movie.
Yeah.
But I think it needed that because you need that slow time in prison. Because
I agree.
However long it was for us, it was longer for him.
I think I like had to stop halfway through. I think I watched 2 and 3 like back to back and then started 4. And I think I had to stop 4 like 40 minutes in. And I went back to it and I still had to pause it like a few times just to like collect myself.
Yeah,
but I was like, oh my god, there's still loads left. And I'm like, again, this is nothing compared to the 12 years he had in prison.
Exactly. Yeah.
But like, it is long, and I think they really did, like, by stretching it out, kind of give you that this is what it was like for him.
And it was also repetitive, which was good actually, because of all mm-hmm. the things he had to go through. He was getting all these prison transfers, he was going through like through to the parole hearings.
Yeah. And then you see him at the end kind of become a little bit resilient and you're like, well, do you know what, if that's your life now, at least you've kind of found some kind of resilience, and it's not going to be, you're not going to be walked all over.
There was some light parts.
There were
like some moments. I mean, I cried because like a lot of it was really horrible to watch, but some of it I cried like when the prison guard brings him like books to read and like cards, and you kind of see him teaching himself how to play solitaire.
Yeah.
And I was like,
and he learns chess at one point.
Yeah, like, and when he like gets that a job as like cleaning the floors and stuff, and you're like, someone is looking after him. But then when he ends up like that scene where he's in hospital and the doctor's like, if he makes it through, this is a miracle. And I was like, oh my god, is he gonna make it?
Yeah,
like I just didn't want, I was like, this isn't it, this isn't the end for him, like it can't be. Like I just was like, the prison guard was just like, I googled it, I couldn't really find out who this prison guard was who gave him the books, but I just thought, thank you, like someone is on his side, they're looking out for him. And like when he transferred and then ended up in hospital, and I was just like, thank you whoever like did not kill him, like made sure he did not die, because I just did not want his story to end there, even though maybe
it's strange. Strange that it's unpredictable. It's based on real life events. We know they all survive.
That's it. It's a brilliant drama. Yeah. Aside from anything else, Ava DuVernay has made a very gripping drama, 4-part drama.
I'm going to definitely go back and watch The 13th. I'm so intrigued, really, because I think across the world we have issues with our justice system.
Well, we see it in Making a Murderer. Yeah. You know, this is not new territory for Netflix in the slightest.
Yeah, I mean, I think they released the confession tapes around the same time, so there is a lot of interest within the justice system and whether it works and whether the kind of prison system works. There's a lot.
Orange is the New Black?
Yeah.
Incredibly political.
Yeah, we have so much to talk about, and I think so much to learn. And I think When They See Us has definitely opened up that discussion.
Yes. And thankfully, you know, at the end, we do see all 5 boys acquitted, and they even get like a $41 million settlement, which is like the largest in the state, potentially in America. And I really, really wanted to talk about that final shot, where you see the boys kind of looking up at the screen, and then it transforms into the real life men.
Yeah.
And it tells you like, you know, what they're doing with their lives, and they're all living their best lives now, like no exaggeration. That for me, I honestly had to leave the room because I was just bawling so much. I was like, what a nice way to end it, was bringing the real life people in.
It did bring it full circle, and you kind of needed it, and it was sweet to see how they had all kind of rebuilt their lives. It was also interesting that Corey Wise was the only one who stayed in New York, whereas everyone else moved out. He kind of wanted to give back to the community, which is incredible given that he was the one that served the longest time, wasn't even on the original suspects list.
But he's like helped fund like for other people who have been wrongfully accused of crimes, and he's like helped them, and like if people haven't got like the money to kind of have like a lawyer or someone to be there, or like say with in the first episode, these boys' parents like can't sit with them or wait, because they have to go to work. They have to, if they don't go to work, they're going to lose their job. So like, I think he's kind of helping to put his time and money into helping people who were maybe in a similar position, which is really like,
it's really admirable and incredible. Like, because you would be, you'd think you'd be resentful, but actually to do that thing for other people is just,
and all of them are kind of helping the community in some kind of way, and it's just a credit to them really. But I thought the ending in itself, I thought, was really interesting. The second that they were acquitted, everything just got a lot lighter.
Yes.
Like, the music got lighter. I feel like it physically got lighter. And I just thought, like, thank God we got that ending.
There was just, like, some moments, like Yusuf said, he was like, oh, no, they're just going to say Mateus Reyes was the sixth guy. They're just going to say, oh, it's the sixth guy we said we were always looking for. And I was like, no. Come on, there can't be another twist to this. Like, and obviously Mateus is like, I was the only one, it was only me. He gave, like, you see him give his, like, full confession. And I was like, yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Now they can,
thank you.
They can try and start their lives, try and move on. And, I mean, for some of them, they clearly haven't. Some of them are still struggling, but are finally kind of getting to move on, and people now know their story.
Yeah. So what was your final thoughts having watched it all, apart from crying?
If you haven't watched this, go and watch it now. I've recommended it to everyone. Yeah. I've told everyone you need to watch it. If you haven't watched it, like, just stop watching everything else that you binge watching and put this on. It is such an important drama. It really opens your eyes. And then watch When They See Us Now. I really wish When They See Us Now was longer. I just felt like I didn't get enough. Like, I want to interview them. I want to, like, know more. And it's, I've been Googling so much. Like, I'm so invested in it right now. And I just think, I wish there were so much more resources in 1989. I'm just like,
Along with DNA testing.
And I just wish I had, like, a time machine to go back. Like, it takes you to places that I have. Like, this is hands down the best thing that I've watched all year.
I think I probably agree.
I definitely agree.
One thing as well that I found is that, yes, it was set in, you know, start of 1989 and, you know, went through to 90s eventually.
I think it's about
2002. 2002, Mateus Reyes confessed. Yeah. And I think 2014 was when they got their settlement.
Yeah. So, you know, it does span quite a long distance. And although, you know, it is very obviously 80s, 90s, you know, the costumes are on point, the music is fantastic.
Oh yeah, definitely the beginning.
What I did find was that this could have easily been set anytime. Like, this was a kind of transcendental drama that, you know, just could exist today very easily. Like, I don't think they needed to put a timestamp on it really, because it was literally only the music and the costumes that told you what era it was.
Yeah, I mean, like, with the whole kind of Black Lives Matter movement that's still going on, I mean, not a lot has changed, depressingly, actually. And with race kind of still being criminalized, I think we can learn a lot from this. And anyone watching it, it's like one of the most watched film TV shows on Netflix. And I think it's going to have a powerful effect going forward. So I think, as DuVernay said about kind of activism through art, this is definitely up there.
I think as well, when you combine, you know, all of the kind of shows that we've mentioned already that Netflix have done that, you know, have that kind of political message behind them, they've got quite a powerful, you know, library as such.
Yeah.
And it's something that, again, has got a conversation going. You know, Orange is the New Black sparked a massive debate. The confession tapes, Making a Murderer, obviously, is, you know, it's the reason I got Netflix. So, you know, I think Netflix is honestly doing quite an amazing job bringing these stories to light, whether it is through a documentary or if it is through a drama. The stories are coming up anyway. So, of course, we have Nile with us today.
Hey,
you've already heard her voice. And she's here to tell us about what's coming up in July, because amazingly, we've got to the end of another month.
It's gone so quickly.
So what is your big hitter?
Stranger Things.
Yes.
Can't say enough. I'm so hyped. When I heard, like, the 80s music and watched the trailer, I was just like, oh my God, so excited. So this year, so we've now reached 1985 in Hawkins, and obviously weird stuff is still going on, as was implied.
Still strange.
Yeah, still strange. This year is going to be more kind of characters adjoining, such as Jake Busey, who is going to be playing a kind of shady journalist. We've got a new mayor in the town. So there's a lot going on. Also, they've got a mall where apparently there's going to be a big kind of, how would you describe it, battle going on.
So it sounds a little bit, was it Night of the Living Dead or Dawn of the Living Dead, whichever one's setting a shopping mall?
Probably. Yeah. Probably. I think, I mean, that you know how they always have their kind of references and nods to like everything. So I'm sure there'll definitely be some kind of reference to that, I would say. So that one is going to kind of see them getting older as well. There'll be apparently some kind of Soviet espionage going on as well.
What?
Yeah. To be fair, it's 4 years before like the fall of the Berlin Wall. So it's very much stuff is still going on.
So do we think, you know, one thing that is kind of swirling at the minute is that Stranger Things could be coming to an end. Do we think
It's time. Just one Helen,
it's time. Yeah.
I've heard some rumours, though, that...
Don't need that.
apparently, it's going to finish on a cliffhanger and go into season 4. But I know how you feel. I do understand.
I think there's probably one more.
Yeah.
I think there's one more.
Look, when Stranger Things came out, that was why I got Netflix. And all of those many years ago. And I watched it in, like, the space of a weekend. And I raved about it to everyone. Told everyone to watch it. And loved it. And then season 2 came out, I was really excited. And now I am not as excited for season 3 as I was for season 2. And I'm just like, is it coming to the end? Like, the kids are getting older. Like, maybe they should start thinking to end it. Like,
I mean,
maybe a very unpopular opinion, I'm sure.
I guess the creators, the Duffer Brothers, did kind of envisage a 5 kind of season arc. But I think it could go to season 4 and end kind of like that, rather than getting too kind of dragging things out, is what I would say. But I'm looking forward to it. I've always loved it, from like the 80s aesthetic.
Yeah.
To just the kind of sci-fi stuff, to all the different nods to stuff like The Shining.
I think from a production point of view, it's fantastic. It's
indeed
unlike anything else that's on.
No, it is great. Yeah. How many times can you go in the Upside Down or the Mind Flayer? Or...
Well, we've got Soviets... spies and journalism and everything. It's gonna be murky. It sounds a bit like a noir, this one.
Yeah, but we'll find out what it's trying to be this time. But yeah, that one is out on Independence Day, 4th of July in America. So I don't know if that's...
Oh, it's a Thursday.
Yes. So you know, Netflix have been changing up when they're dropping stuff, like Black Mirror dropped on a Wednesday. Yeah. Lucifer dropped on a Tuesday. So I think they're changing it up purely because when they know they've got a big hit, they know people are going to watch it regardless of whether it's on a Friday or for a weekend or whatever.
It's good to kind of, you know, let new shows kind of have their Fridays. But
so that's why everyone's booked the 5th of July off.
But we will be discussing Stranger Things in extreme depth next week in our special.
So the other big one is Orange is the New Black season 7. So that's going to be the last ever one. So I think... going to be interesting. I suppose I'm going to be wrapping up all the kind of loose ends and stuff. And I guess it's kind of sad because it's one of Netflix's first kind of originals with House of Cards. And it's broken down so many barriers in terms of race, on screen, kind of LGBTQ representation. So that one, yeah, it'll be sad, but I think I hope it goes out on a high. And that one's coming out on the 26th of July.
I think Orange is the New Black has produced some of the most powerful moments ever seen on the small screen, genuinely.
I think I gave up about season 3. Should I jump back in?
I probably would, but I really like it. I think it's a very good idea. It's very well executed. I've never really had a problem with it. That said, I am glad it's coming to an end now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's time.
Yeah. I think everything does have its time, like Stranger Things as well. Mm. The other one is Queer Eye. So that is going to be season 4. So Fab Five are back. So if you're feeling in a bit of a funk, definitely want to give you like an oomph. I feel like it's like when you watch it, it's like a warm hug and a mug of hot chocolate. And it just makes you feel so good afterwards.
We are a glass of Prosecco.
We're notoriously big fans of Queer Eye on Netflix. So that should never end. While Stranger Things and Orange is the New Black can end, Queer Eye must run forever.
I would love the Fab Five to be in my life, just like cheering me on. You know, like
it needs to continue at least until we can all get on it.
Yeah. Basically, yeah. They need to come to the UK. Tan needs to like come over here.
Can they do like an office makeover?
That would be amazing.
Come and work with me, please.
And so that one's going to be out on the 19th of July. The other big one actually is Money Heist or La Casa de Papel. Part three, which we'll see more kind of the heist. It's kind of been playing out continuously. So rather than being a season three, it'll just be a part three because it'll just pick up from where they left off. That one has been really critically acclaimed. It's a Spanish language drama. Has some of the cast of Elite in it as well, if you're interested. And yeah, so just expect more kind of tense dramas. They're like stuck in the middle of robbing the Royal Mint in Spain. And that one will also be out on the 19th of July.
It's a real, it's very popular, that one. I've never seen it. It's a real word of mouth situation, but I know quite a few people in the office are obsessed with it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is one of the big kind of foreign language ones, along with Dark, which season two aired this year. This month even.
You know, I've been looking for a new show to watch, so maybe that's it.
Yeah. Have a little bit of catching up to do. You've got about 20 episodes before.
Okay, I'm just going to hold on to Stranger
Things. Do Queer Eye again.
I'll wait for Stranger Things.
Yeah. And so in terms of documentaries, there's The Great Hack, which is about the Cambridge Analytica scandal. And that was all about kind of looking at social media in the kind of run-up to the 2016 presidential election and kind of what kind of went down. And that one's going to be coming out on the 24th of July.
Another politically charged one there.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting though.
Can't get enough of it.
And then you've got, it's a bit more off, what am I trying to say? A little bit eccentric, a little bit quirky. So it's Frankenstein's Monsters, Monster Frankenstein. So if, yeah, I was thinking the same. So if you can't get enough of David Harbour, Jim Hopper in Stranger Things, this is kind of a weird mockumentary. And apparently Netflix has described it as expect the unexpected in this over-the-top and often dramatic-ish reimagined tale of mystery and suspense.
So and does it have anything to do with Frankenstein?
I couldn't find...
I am like a purist when it comes to Frankenstein. I studied it for like 5 years at uni.
I wouldn't take it too seriously, to be honest with you. It's apparently a version of David Harbour where he explores his family's history, finds some lost footage, goes on a strange journey even. It's all a bit weird. I'm not sure what I make of it, but I thought because he's going to... Fans of Stranger Things might want to give it a go. It'll probably be nothing like it. But
I thought this was going to be like a cartoon, and I was like, oh, yeah,
me and Helen literally shaking our heads like this.
I'm not convinced, Neela. I'm sorry on this one.
Thank you, Neela.
Well, that will be out on the 16th of July. And the other one I should probably mention is there's another sci-fi show called Another Life, which is about an astronaut and her crew who are searching for alien life but find themselves landing in danger. And that one is going to come out on the 25th of July. So if you're kind of not feeling any of those, there's also a horror series called Typewriter. And if you kind of feel like there's been a hole left after The Haunting of Hill House, maybe give it a go. It's an Indian one. Netflix has had quite a bit of success with their kind of Indian originals. And this one is apparently about three young friends who go in search of an old villa for ghosts.
No, thanks. No.
Yeah, I'm out too.
And then obviously scary things start happening and the past comes back to haunt them.
No.
19th of July, if you're interested.
There was no hole to fit for like for The Haunting of Hill House to be filled.
We don't need ghost stories.
I didn't watch it. Like,
apparently they're doing a kind of sequel to that.
I'm not there. Not doing it.
I think it's called The Haunting of Blythe Manor.
If you'd like me to turn up for work and actually get some sleep, I will not be watching any horror films or shows.
Ghosts,
or anything.
I'm out.
Mm-mm.
And just some other ones in July. You've got Working Mums Season 2. That comes out on the 25th of July. You, Me, Her Season 4. That one's 12th of July. If you're a bit of a foodie, The Taco Chronicles.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That one's on the 12th of July. And then you've got Designated Survivor 60 Days, which is the 1st of July and is a kind of spin-off from Designated Survivor. And I guess that's your roundup for July.
Very comprehensive. Thank you very much, Neela. Just quickly, one very quick answer. What are you looking forward to?
Strange Things.
I'm liking the sound of Taco Chronicles, to be honest. I am sorry. I'll be there with my tacos watching. I love a food show.
What about you?
Orange is the New Black. Definitely. So that's all for this week. Thank you so much for joining us for a chat about When They See Us. Please, please, please go and watch it if you haven't seen it yet.
And if you liked what you heard, please subscribe, comment and tell your friends about us, and join in with the debate on Twitter at Netflix Pod, where we'll be teasing details of our next episode.
And next week, we've mentioned it already, but it's the big one. It's Stranger Things.
We'll have the lowdown on the new series and all of the reactions and theories. You don't want to miss it.
You don't want to miss it. Tune in next week to find out more.